Bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't care. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome into the Bet the Board podcast, powered by FoxBet, NFL Week 9 Monday Night Football Edition. I'm your host, Todd Furman, joined as always by my esteemed colleague and co-host, the one, the only Payne Insider.
Monday morning. Love it.
Time flies when you're having fun, my friend, but amazing you watch some of the NFL games and everyone wanted to talk Payne all season long about maybe home field advantage doesn't exist, road teams are going to continue cashing tickets. Lo and behold, the regression monster bites, and every single home game played on U.S. soil saw the home team get you to the window.
Interesting. There's a lot of clause in that. On U.S. soil that didn't involve a kicker missing a game-winning field goal, all that other good stuff.
Yeah, there's a number of things that have to happen for that scenario to play out. You are exactly right. And, of course, we can't ever get a game to play out the way it's supposed to, but we'll have plenty of time to get into that. Big show planned today. Dr. Chow stops by. Have plenty of injury updates. I'm sure we'll ask him about Jacoby Brissett, Patrick Mahomes, and maybe even sneak in a little Tua talk on top of everything else. But I feel pain after a Sunday like we saw last night, and one of the undefeated teams gets knocked from the ranks of the unbeaten in the New England Patriots. Wanted to know what your biggest takeaway or takeaways were from the Ravens 37-20 victory last evening.
I fell asleep, so I only watched from like 24-20. But I'm kind of pissed because it played out how we thought it would play out. Unfortunately, when you get stuck to adhering to your numbers, you don't end up dabbling at 3.2 or whatever it was. The look ahead line at 6.5, that would have been one of our largest bets of the entire season, but we didn't get the number we wanted and it prevented us from a winner, which is quite frustrating at this point in the season. But we're seeing issues again with New England's offense. The defense struggled to stop the run for back-to-back weeks. That's something that we really outlined in our breakdown last week about how Cleveland, and it's not the best offense, but it's certainly the most talented offense New England had faced to date, how they just marched up and down the field and just continued to shoot themselves in the foot in the downpour. So early on, we saw issues with New England being able to stop the run. They just couldn't. And honestly, 37-20 is a pretty misleading final score. I mean, it's 17-0. New England's dead and buried. It requires a muffed punt to get them back into the game. And then a Mark Ingram fumble in the first half to kind of get them re-energized and back into the game. So that could have been actually much worse than that final score indicated, honestly.
Yeah, definitely a couple of weird situations. Patriots, uncharacteristic turnovers there. Baltimore able to take advantage. Then there were scenarios, like you said, where Baltimore had a chance to really put the screws to them and make New England play from the eight ball. So they were able to hang around. Baltimore does get the win, as you mentioned, winning outright as a right around a 3-point home underdog. New England, of course, saddled with their first loss. And we'll see how the Patriots bounce back. But I don't think it's obviously all doom and gloom for New England. As we know, they make plenty of adjustments, any more than I think Baltimore should be making reservations down in South Florida to play for the Lombardi Trophy in early February. Speaking of South Florida, though, Payne, I guess when we go with the good, the bad, and the ugly, I'm not sure if it's necessarily a good thing, but the Dolphins get that elusive first victory in dominant fashion, for lack of a better term, against the Jets. I'm not really quite sure how to describe what unfolded there.
It wasn't a good weekend for Florida State or for my Dolphins, either one.
Well, Florida State, we were going to get to that on Wednesday. I feel that there's a rant coming in some capacity, so I don't know if you want to whet the appetite of our loyal listeners.
No, we can wait. I wasn't happy with the Dolphins winning yesterday, obviously, but they did enough through the air. I actually watched a good portion of that game just because there wasn't a lot of 1 p.m. games going on, but the Jets were down like their top five linebackers in this game. So once Preston Williams and Devontae Parker showed that they could consistently win one-on-one and just like dominate outside, it forced Greg Williams into zone and forced him into like this a lot of cover too. And so at that point, it's about being efficient and executing for an offense. And I think at this level in the NFL, if you're stuck to playing cover two, you're probably going to get beat pretty frequently if an offense is even halfway efficient. So Fitzpatrick did a good job, didn't throw a pick. He was successful in 50% of his passes. He found Gesicki numerous times, who was taking advantage of like the sixth string linebacker. And so the offense was efficient enough through the air to get a big win. And I mean, at this point, Adam Gase is probably not returning for year two.
That may be an understatement. I mean, some of his comments and everything else, you look at the way that the team has played, and if he was supposed to be the guy taking Sam Darnold to the next level, I mean, Darnold looks like he's regressed since that performance against the Cowboys. I'm not sure what we're seeing from this Jets offense.
I don't know what we're seeing either. He did have a nice little run towards the end of last season. I think we were all expecting this leap coming into this season. We haven't gotten it so far. Now, when you look at some of the mistakes Darnold's making, specifically towards the end of the first half against the Dolphins, just this isn't on Gase. I mean, you can't just throw balls up for grabs. Huge turnover before the end of the half, which kind of zapped momentum. Now, I know they turned it into a safety and a long field goal, so instead of coming up with seven, they ended up with five in the final like 2 minutes or so. But yeah, he's struggling. He's not overly accurate. He's not overly decisive. There's a lot of things he's not doing pre-snap, and then he's making some errors in judgment on throwing the ball as well. Just mistakes that can't have happen. And I think, again, there's no pass protection. It's tough to be good as a young quarterback if you're constantly running around for your life. And I think that's, again, something that Gase has struggled with throughout his career. He just doesn't like having an extra guy in to protect. And when your offensive line isn't very good, we've seen back-to-back regimes of or stops where he's been, his offense just has issues protecting.
Yeah, from a young quarterback still struggling to find his confidence and get things going to a journeyman quarterback who put together a pretty good performance. I don't know, Payne, if we give Kansas City credit for the big win against Minnesota or if it had more to do with Vikings' inadequacy and inability to try and win that game when they needed to most. Kirk Cousins still continues to find that fourth quarter game-winning drive to define him as a Minnesota Viking elusive as the Chiefs win outright by a field goal, you know, catching 4.5-5.
Game got to 5.5. Where did that thing close?
I thought it closed 5.5. Did it get as high as 5.5? I saw 4.5, 5 for the better part of Sunday morning, and I think some shops probably closed in that range, and there's no doubt there had to be a 5.5 then.
Yeah, I mean, huge win, right? Like, what a swing for the Chiefs season. You know, you either dip to 5-4 or you ascend to 6-3, and I, you know, it was a massive game. I know Mahomes looks like he's going to return this week, but I thought Matt Moore was really good, especially that final drive to get him in field goal range. And what's interesting is like I'm higher on Matt Moore, I think, than just about anybody. And I still undervalued him. I mean, there were groups on game day running delay like 3.5 minus 05 on the Vikings. But I thought Matt Moore was pretty damn good. 53% of his passes graded successful. Didn't have an interception. Still had three explosive passes. The Chiefs ground game looked like it got a little bit back on track. I know things skewed a little bit with Damian Williams' massive 91-yarder. That was that changed the game a little bit. But you look at the other runs as well. KC was successful in 56% of the runs. So that was big. Now, the biggest thing to me, though, and we've kind of bagged on them all season long, so I think it's only right to give them a little bit of credit here. Chris Jones returned in the middle defensively. And the Vikings were held to 3.6 a rush, 26% rushing success rate on the ground. So the defense, I believe, is better than a lot of people think. I've kind of been pounding the table that their pass defense is significantly better. If you can continue to get performances like we've seen, you know, on Thursday night against Denver and then this week stopping a ground team and choking out the best part of their offense, Chiefs are going to be interesting if Mahomes can stay healthy. But Andy Reid just continues to be fantastic, man. And I think if you're a Chiefs fan and you said, hey, it's the middle of November and we're expecting a win that was a combination of Matt Moore and the defense being stout against the run, you'd probably call me a liar, you know?
Hey, you take it any way you can get it. No one's going to apologize for W's in the National Football League. You mentioned Mahomes. Very curious to see when he comes back and how healthy he can be leading that offense that's established. Hopefully, you would think a little bit of a ground game, as you mentioned, with Damian Williams going for that 91-yard carry. Last but not least, in the good category, Payne, what can you say about the Seattle Seahawks and what Russell Wilson means to them? I mean, you've sung his praises and say that this guy deserves more money than just about any quarterback in the league. The Seahawks defense ill-equipped to slow down Jameis Winston and the Tampa Bay Bucks, but Russell Wilson goes out there and continues to make plays when he need him to at the most.
Yeah, there's no question. I mean, Russell Wilson is the best pressure quarterback in the NFL right now. And in the second half, they continued to they threw the ball a little more, which was how you should attack Tampa Bay, right? It's one of the best run defenses in the NFL, but they struggle against the pass. And when their top guy is also out, which inserted the rookie Dean into the game where he just got absolutely roasted. That's unfortunate, but I'm just looking in the second half and in overtime, Seattle averaged 8.7 yards per pass, had four explosives, and three touchdown passes. And unfortunately, that's what changed that game a little bit towards the end. They just couldn't get off the field. I was hoping, for the sake of every single listener that we had, I know six was the number we gave out and was widely available for about 36 hours after recording. Six was a push, but all numbers probably should have covered there had Tampa gone for two, had Myers made the game-winning field goal, had Tampa not lost the coin toss. So a real series of events there. But kudos to Russell Wilson for pulling a rabbit out of the hat once again.
Yeah, I mean, talk about a team that flirts with disaster more often than not, this Seattle Seahawks team. But Russell Wilson continues to do Russell Wilson things and put together tremendous performances, finishing the day with a shade under 400 yards and five touchdown passes. With the good come the bad, Payne, I was curious to get your take on what you saw that really disappointed you yesterday in the National Football League. And you can group it into the ugly as well, because I'm sure there's plenty of overlap.
Yeah, that's fine. Let's go with the Packers offense. I was a little surprised about that, and you know, I know we talked all week, we're really contemplating the Chargers, and then there was a decent sized move on the Packers there out to like 4.5, and it kind of made me cool a little bit. But the more I dug into that, certainly the Chargers had a home run effort, they deserve to win the game, don't take anything away from them, but the Packers absolutely no showed. And I wonder if it has anything to do with how they adjusted and changed their schedule leading into the week. I know Monday they were given completely off, which is a little bit of a change. And then usually when they're on the road, they will travel on Saturdays, practice Friday. They flip-flopped that. They traveled on Friday and practiced Saturday in a walkthrough manner. So maybe that impacted some things. But 1.4 yards per play for the Packers offense in a 20% success rate with the script in the first quarter. 50 total yards at halftime. We've kind of talked about this ad nauseum with the Packers and their offense, right? They've done really good with the script. They've done really good early, and they've started to cool as the game went on. So when you don't get that initial burst, it's going to look pretty ugly. So kudos to the Chargers, but that was a real lackluster effort from the Packers offense.
Yeah, you talk about lackluster, and I'm not sure that's a strong enough word to describe their performance. Of course, when you start off the season as well as Green Bay has, not a reason to hit the panic button by any stretch of the imagination. You kind of got that feeling from Aaron Rodgers when he was asked after. He said, "We were served a piece of humble pie. We'll go back to the drawing board and try and figure it out." The Chargers in a must-win scenario definitely stepped up and showed a little bit of that. I guess when we look in Philadelphia, Payne, a team that you figured had their season on the line, and I guess it's been on the line for a few weeks, the Green Bay Packers. Jeez, one track mind. Chicago Bears. I guess they made the Green Bay Packers first half performance look like an offensive juggernaut. The Bears mustered a grand total of 9 yards offensively in their loss against the Philadelphia Eagles.
0.1 yards per pass in the first half for Mitchell Trubisky with a 13% passing success rate. You can't win games like that in 1920, let alone 2019. It sucks that DeSean Jackson exited that game. I really want to see what Philadelphia looks like at full strength, but the defense is starting to come around, right? We know how good they are stopping the run, getting after the quarterback. The secondary was the thing that a lot of people have question marks with. We outlined how on Thursday that that unit isn't as bad as people believe, and it really was on display. I know Gabriel was back to for the Bears. It should have helped that passing attack. He did have the one big explosive play in the second half, but I was really impressed with Philadelphia defensively, especially how they defended the pass. But yeah, the Bears offense is a train wreck right now. They need to get that figured out. I was listening to someone that's really in the know, and there's a little bit of a disconnect with Matt Nagy and Mitchell Trubisky right now in terms of what Matt Nagy's asking Trubisky to do. And it's not this dumbed-down offense. And I get it from Matt Nagy's perspective. Hey, this is now year three for Trubisky. It's now year two in my system. I want to enhance it a little bit. I want to take it to the next level. I don't want to have to babysit the guy. But what he's being asked to do is be a pocket passer a little bit more than he was last season, not operate outside, not using his legs nearly as much. Those are things that Matt Nagy hasn't allowed Trubisky to do. It hasn't been as big of a implementation into this offense as it was a year ago. So there's a little bit of a battle going on there. I don't know if it's Nagy flexing his muscles to the front office saying, hey, get me a different quarterback or what, but that's really, you know, aside from Trubisky just not being very good, what's going on with this Chicago Bears offense.
Yeah, incredible. I mean, how quickly the honeymoon ends with the Bears being the talk of the town last year to now struggling to figure out an identity. We weren't high on Mitchell Trubisky. I mean, as you outlined pretty extensively on the preseason podcast when we broke down the NFC North, but I don't think Bears fans anywhere expected this kind of rock bottom type effort for Chicago to date. Last but not least in this particular category, I don't know what we want to say about the Cleveland Browns at this point and continue to struggle, not only on the offensive side that draws a ton of criticism for all their star power, but you saw some things that were rather troubling on the defensive side as well.
Yeah, offensively, you just got to convert when you get in scoring range. You can't kick field goals. That was the bottom line there. I mean, you had 73 plays. You know, you put up 351 yards, 50 more than the Broncos did. You just need to be more efficient with your situational football, and that hasn't been the case, and something that we kind of outlined last week against New England. When you look this week, and it's been all season. We've talked about this. This defense for Cleveland that we thought was going to be elite and take that next step has really struggled in the trenches, stopping the ground game. And again, Denver was able to get going. 45% success rate, 6.4 yards a carry allowed. So they need to get that buttoned up, figure out what's going on with the interior of their defense. So that's a little surprising to me coming into the season. We thought that would be an elite defense. Been very good against the pass, just not stout in the middle of that defense.
And we'll see exactly how much they get tested this week, which allows a logical segue from the good, the bad, and the ugly into some of our adjusted look-ahead numbers. And Cleveland makes a logical place to start, Payne, where we're looking at the Browns, currently a 2.5-point home favorite, even some twos out there now. I know Fox Bet holding strong at 2.5 as they welcome in the Buffalo Bills. Look-ahead number on this game had the Browns a full field goal favorite.
I'm not sure where this line's going to end up. I think it's clear that many professional bettors don't believe Buffalo's as good as their record, right? And we saw that 2 weeks ago when Philadelphia got absolutely buried in that game. And so I don't think a performance or a win against Haskins, you know, at home is going to change that mindset. But I'm intrigued to see where this number goes. If Cleveland has anything left in the tank, and if you listen to Baker Mayfield, he claims that within those walls of the Cleveland Browns organization, everyone is still confident, everyone is still bought in, everyone is still sticking together. This would be the spot where they could potentially show out. And when you just quickly think of that matchup, as great as Buffalo's defense is, and it was elite last year, it's not this year, they do again struggle to stop the run. So you would think it's a game where Chubb has the potential to get going, and it's not going to all be on Baker Mayfield's shoulders.
Any game that's not all on Baker Mayfield's shoulders, I think at this point, is a good thing for the Cleveland Browns. Tampa Bay, look-ahead number, had them a 6-point favorite as they welcome in the Arizona Cardinals. Your current number at Fox Bet sees Tampa a 4-point favorite. Arizona, of course, coming in with extended rest. Tampa having to make the cross-country flight, I think the longest in the NFL by mileage outside of Miami, from Seattle back home to try and regroup after a heartbreaking overtime loss.
Yeah, back-to-back heartbreaking losses for Tampa, which has effectively derailed their season. Now they're back at home. I'm not sure this is a team that you want to lay points with. And I think Arizona, we have seen to be better and especially the last few weeks, than what we anticipated. It was a real game effort on Thursday night. You've now had extra time to prepare. Arizona seems to have played some of its best ball away from home. And when we talk about where Tampa is vulnerable, it's through the air, and you'll have to look at some of the injuries leading up this week in the Tampa secondary. So that could be an issue that grows even larger if their best corner is out this week. So Arizona has shown an ability to move the ball through the air a little bit. We know that's what Kingsbury wants to do. So interesting matchup, but I don't disagree with that move at this point.
This one will have a little bit of injury buzz built into it, I think, at this point. Of course, we'll ask Dr. Chow how long he thinks or believes that Jacoby Brissett may be sidelined, if at all. Colts 16-point favorites on the look ahead as they welcome in the Miami Dolphins. Number reopens at Fox Bet, Indianapolis minus 12.
And ticking down even further now, we're at basically 11. And to your point, it's the two injuries. It's Brissett, it's T.Y. Hilton. But I also think, to a degree, we are now comprehending and understanding that the Miami Dolphins have not quit yet, right? So I know they get the big win this weekend, but you can fast forward to Monday Night Football. They have got the Pittsburgh Steelers down 14. A couple of weeks back at Dallas, they had an opportunity to take a lead into halftime. So this is a team that has not quit at this point, and they are showing effort. And that's all you're going to ask for when you're getting this many points. We also seen the Indianapolis Colts, as good as they have been this season, there hasn't been an ability to blow teams out. They haven't been overly explosive offensively, and that's kind of what can distort a game. And without potentially T.Y. Hilton or Brissett, that explosiveness probably ticks down a notch even further. So big number there. Not shocked it's coming down.
Small move on this game, but off of a key, so I figured it was worth touching on. I'm sure we'll get to it in more extensive detail on the Thursday edition of our Bet the Board podcast. Look ahead number here, Rams a 3-point favorite coming off of the bye, headed into Heinz Field to take on the Steelers. Number now out to Rams minus 4, despite the Steelers getting a victory thanks to some errant Colts special teams and Adam Vinatieri continuing to struggle in conjunction with a bad hold.
Laces out, Dan. So at 4, 4.5, you know, let's see what happens. It's first thing Monday morning, so I don't have a ton of information on this game yet. But as you alluded to, one we'll talk about on Thursday. But when you look at Pittsburgh, kind of a phony win, right? They were held to 4.4 yards per play at home at a 36% success rate. You get the defensive touchdown, which is at least a 10-point swing. The offense gets even aided and you know, picks up a couple points on the muffed punt after the safety. You miss the game-winning field goal. There was a backup quarterback for 41 minutes in that game. So kind of a phony win for Pittsburgh, and the market is depicting as such here on Monday.
We can talk all we want about what went on with the Colts and some of that move, but there's someone who can add a little better perspective in terms of what some of those injuries might mean.
Are you injured or are you hurt?
When injuries occur in the NFL, there's only one man to turn to.
If you're hurt, you can still play. If you're injured, you can't.
Let's check in with 17-year NFL team doctor turned medical analyst, Dr. David Chow.
So are you hurt or are you injured?
This is Chow's Corner.
He joins us every Monday here on the Bet the Board podcast. You, of course, can follow Dr. David Chow on Twitter at ProFootballDoc, the best in the business when it comes to real-time injury updates that'll impact your wagering. And, of course, setting those fantasy rosters as we get down to crunch time for all of those season-long leagues. And Dr. Chow, it wouldn't be the NFL in 2019 if we didn't have another major quarterback injury that could impact a divisional race. This time it happened in Indianapolis. Jacoby Brissett goes down, wasn't able to finish, and all sorts of speculation if he'll be back next week as the starting quarterback of the Indianapolis Colts.
Yeah, obviously, you know, this is the second time it's happened to the Colts with Andrew Luck being out or retired. And kind of a freak accident. There's some good news and bad news. The freak accident part is, who would have ever thought or bet that Quentin Nelson, of all people, Mr. King of Pancakes himself, got knocked backwards and into his own quarterback's lead leg? I mean, I didn't see that coming. But what I think saves Jacoby Brissett a little bit is that he routinely wears a brace on that lead leg. And many quarterbacks do. prophylactically, because the lead leg is what's vulnerable. That's what's in the trash. This is when you step into throws as you're looking downfield, and people typically fall into your lead leg, not back leg. And by video, his ankle got stepped on and twisted, but it was his knee. That's an issue. And in game, we said MCL sprain, and indeed that has been confirmed. But that the degree of the MCL sprain could have been worse if he didn't start off wearing the brace. There doesn't seem to be an ACL or anything else. And I guess the good news is he wasn't completely ruled out of the game. He didn't play again in the game, but he was on the sidelines moving around, and it looked to be that he was the emergency backup in case something else happened. So that bodes well for not a long-term injury.
Positive news for the Colts. One other member of Indianapolis I want to ask you about, Dr. Chow, is T.Y. Hilton. He had the calf injury. It happened in practice. So I know you don't have video footage, but based on what you're hearing, what's being reported, how long do we expect T.Y. Hilton out?
Well, calf injuries tend to linger, and it's obviously pretty important for an explosive athlete like him. I mean, honestly, lucky to have him by Thanksgiving. I mean, it's not going to be this next week. And it's going to be, I mean, it could linger into December, but he's usually a quick healer. So targeting somewhere right before or after Thanksgiving.
One injury that we did see from a pass catcher that was looked pretty ugly in real time, George Kittle, the knee injury, did come back, scored a touchdown afterwards, but didn't finish the game on the final drive. I know he's got a few extra days, haven't played Thursday, but what does it look like for George Kittle this week, Dr. Chow?
Well, you know, when it happened, I was actually out trick-or-treating and, you know, only looking at video on my phone. And
how did that go? I was trick-or-treating.
That was fine. You know, the bad news is the now 7-year-olds want to do their own thing. So there's no more family costumes. So we forced the 2-year-old to be the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man, what my wife did. And she and I were Ghostbusters.
Well, that's
See, Paint. Dr. Chow and his whole family get dressed up. You can try and go in Bet the Board theme costume somewhere along the way, one of these upcoming Halloweens.
Maybe down the line. Now, I apologize for distracting you. We were on George Kittle, I believe.
We can bring this back to football. I had a passing thought of trying to make my son dress up as Sam Darnold, since we were Ghostbusters. But I couldn't do that to him, and I didn't really want to troll him, Sam Darnold, that much. But in any case, back to George Kittle. Hyperextended his knee, no ligament damage, and you could tell that off of Twitter video, et cetera. But the worry there was a bone bruise. Now, there's no question he came back pretty quickly and was very athletic and scored a touchdown and did very well, the whole deal. But at halftime, I did a Periscope saying, I'm not sure that he comes back in the second half or finishes the game. And he missed most of, I think, the fourth quarter of the game. Now, look, it's good news that Kyle Shanahan said nothing major. But, you know, this ties probably into another topic that we'll talk about. I mean, this reminds me of best case scenario for Patrick Mahomes. Yeah, best case scenario, ... for a dislocated kneecap. Now, for George Kittle, what's the definition of minor? Maybe there really is nothing and he's fine, nothing going forward. Or is there a bone bruise? And they're saying that's minor because there's no ligament damage, there's no meniscus, there's no cartilage damage, there's nothing surgical. So minor, there's a bone bruise. But sometimes for bone bruises, you can miss a few weeks, sometimes up to 4 to 6 weeks. I'm not saying George Kittle will miss 4 to 6 weeks. I'm saying that until we see firm evidence that he's full practice or back on a practice field or allowed to run and jump, I still have a little asterisk and some worry about George Kittle, at least for this upcoming week.
Interesting. Two more pass catchers that we can hit on pretty quickly, and I just kind of want to get your vibe on what you saw and how they performed and then maybe what it means moving forward. Devontae Adams, how did he look returning from the turf toe? And then obviously DeSean Jackson, they were calling him 90 to 95% healthy coming into the week. They brought his trainer up this week to assess his practice routine, and he eventually ended up playing but didn't last very long, exited after the first possession. What do we hear from, or what do we think about those two receivers, Dr. Chow?
The arrows are going two different directions there.
Yep.
You know, they might have both started the day in the 90s, and Davante Adams is going to get to 100%. Going to be better next week and better even the week after that. He did reasonably well, although his team did not, right? He seemed to move and do reasonably well, although his team was one of the bigger shockers of the Sunday. But Davante Adams is going to be fine, I believe, and I don't think there'll be any setbacks. DeSean Jackson, been saying for a while now, 3 weeks ago I wrote an article, been talking on my podcast and other things about how I think he has a core muscle injury. It started as a groin, was then an abdomen, has been lingering on. The head coach has said it may linger on the whole season in some way, shape, or form. He's missed, what, seven, almost 8 weeks. Now he finally comes back at 90, 95% and doesn't last the first series. Two targets, one drew a PI, one other catch for 5 yards, and that's it. So he's waited 7 or 8 weeks to get to this point, and it didn't work. So is waiting another week going to change anything? I don't think so, unless there's something miraculous in the works here. I mean, he's out for probably quite a bit longer. At this point, I think the team and he, if indeed it's a core muscle injury, which is my suspicion, go ahead and invest the 6 weeks, have the surgery, and see if you can make it back for a very late season or playoff run. Because of the other way, it just doesn't seem to be working at this point in time. So very disappointing news for DeSean Jackson at this point in time.
Absolutely. There's no doubt about it. And there was some talks at the trade deadline about Howie potentially going and getting a burner and Robbie Anderson. That didn't come to fruition because they thought DeSean would be back. So that is a big blow to their offense. Last one I want to talk to you about before I hand the baton back to Todd. Patty Mahomes, obviously, more limited practices this week. Do you envision him out there Sunday against Tennessee? And if so, what kind of limitations to his game should we expect?
Well, Patrick Mahomes is basically superhuman, the way he throws a ball out of the stadium and so forth. But the issue with him is that the double-edged sword of having loose ligaments, first of all, there are advantages. Among the advantages is that you can wind your arm back to be able to throw balls out of stadiums. The advantage is that when your kneecap does dislocate, less things tear and stretch because of the looseness of your ligaments, but not nothing, but less things do. So those are the advantages, allows for quicker recovery. The disadvantage of the loose ligaments is the redislocation issue. On Sunday, Jay Glazer quoted that Patrick Mahomes was told by the team doctor, if he played this week, there would have been this week as in yesterday, there would have been a 40% chance of redislocation. And if he waits until after 21 days, until next week, that number drops to 10 to 15%. I don't know that you can be that accurate with the numbers. And maybe the doctor can because he's seen Mahomes and looking at the MRIs and the whole deals. But those numbers aren't ridiculous. They're about the ballpark. I don't know that you can ever be that specific. So what do I think is going to happen? Patrick Mahomes is going to play next week. From the get-go, when it happened, also on a Thursday, next Sunday, that'll be 3.5 weeks from the injury. And we said from the get-go, after the kneecap dislocation in-game, that it would be about a 3 to 4 week return. That's right in the middle of it. I think he will play. I think he will surprise people as to how effective he will be. Will he be completely himself? Maybe not. But I think he will look very good next Sunday when he plays. The question is, when and if does lightning strike? It didn't take much to dislocate the kneecap on that quarterback sneak, and it won't take much to have it happen again. And you never know where or when. If you make him a statue in the pocket, it's less likely to happen, but that's not his game. So I think I'll be watching, fingers crossed, with bated breath, really for the rest of the season, hoping the injury doesn't come back to bite him. And I still look for surgery into the season. So I think he's going to be okay. I think he's going to look good. But there's always that chance.
One last thing on Patrick Mahomes, Dr. Chow, before we have a college football injury, want your take on, just to kind of follow up there. When you look at Mahomes and their upcoming schedule, they have a date in Mexico City looming. If you're involved in that and you think there's fear of re-injury and potential turf concerns, is that something that you worry about more, or is it contact when you talk about potential re-dislocation for knee, and what would make him the most vulnerable?
Well, you know, if you look at the injury related to the quarterback sneak, it was his foot planted, his knee and leg twisted out, externally rotated, and his knee slightly forced into valgus. Those are the stresses that involve pushing the kneecap out. So it's different sets of circumstances, unique sets of circumstances. I would hope and assume this trillion-dollar industry, the NFL, has any turf concerns down in Mexico figured out this year. Although last year it worked out to my benefit, because I actually took my son to the LA game. But I hope they have those concerns figured out. So I don't see the Mexico thing being that big of a deal, so to speak. But you never know when it's going to happen is the key. And yes, I think he's going to wear a knee brace to help hold the kneecap over, but those are never 100% secure. So look, it's been done before. Matthew Stafford played after 3 weeks, finished the season in 2008 or 9, I'm forgetting now, and then had surgery at the end of the season. But they're two different types of quarterbacks, and would stand to reason the more dynamic you are, the more different chances you might get to be in such a position. I'm not saying it's doom and gloom and inevitable for Patrick Mahomes, but the risk is there.
Well, fingers crossed one of the league's most dynamic playmakers, when he gets back on the field under center, can operate at that high level we've grown accustomed to, especially with the Patriots showing some vulnerability, of course, last night against the Baltimore Ravens. College football, biggest matchup of arguably the entire season, number one against number two. And we talked about Tua Tagovailoa and what the expectations could be upon his return. Can we just kind of touch on, you know, the procedure he had, the expectations, and potential recovery there without knowing any of the specifics? Because we know over the next 5 to 6 days, speculation is going to run rampant among the college football community. Tua's going to be out there. Is he 30%? Is he 50%? Figure there's no better place to go than a doctor who can assess, you know, what we might be able to see with that tightrope procedure?
Well, first of all, the procedure itself is something that is kind of primarily done at the University of Alabama. It's done nowhere in the NFL among the 32 NFL team physicians in this circumstance. Tightrope is a device that can be used when there is ankle joint instability. In Tua's case, it's being used when there doesn't seem to be ankle joint instability. In other words, in the NFL, A.J. Green, Matt Ryan coming off the injury, Saquon Barkley, you name it, a number of people with high ankle sprains, Christian Kirk, none of them have had this procedure because their ankle was not unstable. And Tua had this procedure. I'm not saying it's wrong to have the procedure. I'm just saying it's not something that's normally adopted in the NFL, and I've written an article about this. Maybe they're ahead of the curve there. But the point is, he walked off the field with less of a limp or almost no limp than Matt Ryan. Saquon Barkley came off the field and was on crutches and a boot, not allowed to put weight on it, and didn't have surgery. Tua walked into an ambulance with no boot, nothing, and had surgery. So I have to think the surgery is more prophylaxis than for primary treatment. And if he plays this weekend, it will be not because of the surgery, but almost in spite of the surgery, in terms of the soreness from the surgery. I think he's got a chance to play, but the tightrope is not biologic. It's not allowing for healing. That's still nature taking its course. It's just holding it so it can heal. But if he wasn't put in a boot and crutches, it probably wasn't unstable. If you rewind to the previous year, when he had the other ankle operated on after the SEC championship game, he had the high ankle sprain in the first quarter, played until the fourth quarter, had an inversion standard sprain to the right side, then left the game, and then had ankle surgery on the left ankle where he played three quarters of football on, and then came back for the championship games in the college bowl game. So that's where the pattern of things is unusual. So getting back to the point, is he going to play or is he not going to play? You know, ultimately, I think he probably will play, but he won't be fully effective. Patrick Mahomes will be a lot more effective and a lot closer to 100% when he plays this weekend than when Tua plays this weekend. That's the difference in terms of what the recovery is. So assuming he plays, which I think he has a reasonable chance of, and I don't have a crystal ball because of the magnitude of the game, his play will be much more significantly altered than Patrick Mahomes this weekend.
A lot of folks out there going to wait with bated breath, not only Alabama and LSU fans, but other teams that could be impacted by an Alabama loss across the landscape. So it should be fascinating to see that unfold. You should follow Dr. Chow on Twitter if you're not already doing so, at ProFootballDoc, the single best source when it comes to injury updates, both pregame, in-game, and postgame, to your favorite players, both for gambling and all of those fantasy implications. Dr. Chow, can't thank you enough for your time this morning and look forward to chatting with you same time next week.
Thanks, guys.
Dr. Chow coming off the top ropes with a little shade directed at Sam Darnold in our interview with him today.
That would be hilarious if that's what his kid dressed up as.
How
does
that
look? What do you do?
I mean, do you
like
go
lipstick
with
on the cheek and like, how does that look?
I don't know. Do you go ghost costume with a Sam Darnold jersey over the top? I mean, I'm trying to think of how this plays out to be able to execute it the way you need to.
Yeah, that would actually be pretty cool. But there's got to be lipstick somewhere.
You got to try and mix it up. One way or another, you got to be able to try and pull it off.
And I'm not sure that's the place you want to start, right? Have no. Lipstick on your five-year-old son.
No, probably probably not. But, no, some crazy stuff there. Great to get his perspective.
Way to change
on not
direction there. I was really hoping to get some insight from you on that.
Great to get perspective on Patrick Mahomes and Tua. Of course, Alabama LSU will be one of our featured games that we'll preview on Wednesday's edition of the Bet the Board podcast, talking about all things college football. But I'm curious to see if Patty Mahomes is back this weekend for the Tennessee Titans. It sounds like Dr. Chow is optimistic that they might let him give it a go.
It makes me so nervous. Oh, I'm not going to be able to watch Chiefs games. It's going to make me so nervous.
Well,
hopefully
loose,
he's healthy.
Loose ligaments are tough, man. You guys, I don't know if you can go in there with a little screwdriver and tighten them up somehow, but I have a feeling everything that Mahomes brings to the table, loose ligaments will always be in play.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyways, so, let's get to this Monday Night Football game here.
All right, Monday Night Football. We're looking at the Dallas Cowboys, a 6.5-point favorite, number trending towards 7 at FoxBet. Total on this game, 48.5. Dallas of late, Payne, has absolutely dominated the division. They've been a covering machine, winning games straight up. And I believe at last check, the last 15 games in the division, 13-2 against the spread. It's Jason Garrett off a bye, so I'm not sure we upgrade anything about the Cowboys. But when you look at the way to handicap this game, we can take it a variety of different ways. Giants offense against the Cowboys defense, and I was remiss not asking Dr. Chow about Leighton Vander Esch and when we should expect him back. But I think that makes plenty of sense to start. Giants offense led by Daniel Jones against arrested Dallas defense.
I was hoping that he'd have his full complement of weapons to play simultaneously for the first time this season. So I would have loved to have seen what he can do with Saquon, Shepard, Ingram, and Tate all playing together. We thought that was going to be the case, but Shepard seemed to have regressed in the concussion protocol and is officially out tonight. I think when you start to break down what the Giants could do here offensively, I know there's some things kind of surfacing about how they've performed against better defenses and what they'll look like here. I don't want to be an excuse factory for Daniel Jones, but I think you played a pissed off Vikings team and there was weather in that game. So I feel like there's a little bit of a reason why he didn't perform overly well there. And then, of course, I think you completely scratch the short week Thursday night game in New England with your top four weapons out in a windstorm. So to me, this is going to look a little different, right? I think they're going to have some success moving the ball. I'm still not sure what the Cowboys defense is. They obviously have the potential to be great, but so far, wildly disappointing effort. I think week to week, you can see them rise up in big games like Philadelphia, but the energy, effort, and, you know, intensity isn't always there. And so when you look at Dallas's defense as a whole, bottom third in the NFL in both passing and rushing success rate. They are below average in defensive efficiency despite facing the third easiest schedule of offenses. So I think there's going to be some plays to be had here against the Dallas defense, quite frankly. You know, it's going to be up to the Giants offense to keep pace. And And I think that's probably going to start up front. Daniel Jones, protect the kid, please. It's unbelievable. They've spent money on Nate Solder. They've spent draft resources. They've upped the offensive line, making trades with other teams. Like, the offensive line just doesn't seem to be fixed right now. Daniel Jones has been pressured on a league-high 45% of his dropbacks. It is far and away the most of qualifying quarterbacks. I think that has to change tonight. Keep him upright. If you do, he will make plays. To your point about Van Der Esch being out, he hasn't played as well as we thought he would this season. But he's certainly capable of being elite. I think when you have Sean Lee, that dip off in production isn't going to be as huge as it would be for another team losing its best linebacker. But I think, you know, Sean Lee is probably a little bit slower. Evan Engram, Saquon Barkley are two guys that are nightmare matchups for linebackers in the passing game. So with Van Der Esch out, that could hurt a little bit. You go back to that first matchup in week one. Evan Engram was targeted 14 times. He caught 11, went for 116 and a touchdown. Saquon, in that opening matchup, only 15 touches because it was pretty much a blowout, but he averaged 9.3 a touch. So you have to get those guys the ball early and often. So if you can protect Daniel Jones, if you can get Saquon and Evan Engram going in the pass game, I think Dallas is, or I think the Giants rather, are going to be able to move the ball here. And I think they're going to have to. I really believe that this is a game where the offense is probably going to have to match Dallas score for score.
Well, you mentioned the other side of the ball, and clearly Dallas comes into this game with the number one offense in the league in terms of yards per game production, 437 a contest. Also have the third-ranked passing offense throwing for a shade under 300 yards a game. And you have to go all the way back, Payne, to 1995 to find the last time that Dallas led the league in total offense, and that ultimately resulted in a Super Bowl-caliber campaign. I'm not going to quite go that far, but Dak Prescott steps up his game. You mentioned the level of energy and intensity that the Cowboys bring on the defensive side of the division. It seems that the offense follows suit, and with extra time to prepare, I mean, what can the Giants do to take away at least something that Dallas does well for such a balanced attack?
It's really important, right? And a lot of these games swing so much, and you know, it's just easy off the top of my head thinking Penn State, Michigan State, right? If you have an underdog or you have the lesser team, the less talented team, it's important that you get out fast and confident early. Because if you're not, then things start to snowball. It gets into the back of your mind that you're not entrenched in this game and like, hey, we're up against it here. So for me, it's like, can the Giants just make a play or two in that first quarter? It'll go a long way. It'll keep them focused. It'll keep them involved in this game. And when you look at Dallas, there's probably a glimmer of hope that that could happen, right? Through 8 weeks and only like 7 data points, which is an extremely small sample, but it's what we have in the NFL. You look at the first quarter of these games, and the Cowboys' offense is 15th in overall success rate, so just slightly above average. But from the second quarter onward, Dallas is number one in rushing success rate, passing success rate, and they're the most explosive offense in the NFL to date. So it is important that the Giants get stops early. Maybe they get out and have a early score offensively, and you take a lead into the second quarter, and you're just mentally entrenched in this game. It's not a blowout. That's the key here. The one thing, though, that's big, and it's the last metric I talked about, was the explosiveness. It's important that this Giants defense makes Dallas work, right? The secondary can't have blown assignments. Jenkins and Baker can't give up like these gobs of explosive plays like they've done all season. You look in the first meeting, week one, Dak Prescott, 12.7 yards per pass attempt, was successful on 72% of his pass attempts, had 7 explosives. And I believe both Cooper and Gallup went for over 100 yards each in that game. And I was looking at Gallup specifically. He was thrown to 7 times in that game. All 7 were ended in a successful play. So somehow, some way, this secondary is going to have to play above their current production level. I think obviously the numbers that I just mentioned there will be really difficult for Dallas to replicate because the Giants pass defense just, it's not good right now. So maybe they come up with something, maybe they saw something on film, but just at its core, the Giants pass defense, 50% of throws have graded successful. It's 27th in the NFL. Efficiency-wise, 28th in passing defense, 29th in explosive pass defense. So you know, when you look at some of those metrics, what's pretty wild is the Giants haven't played like some ridiculous schedule of opposing offenses, right? It's middle of the pack. It's 17th toughest. When you look at how the Giants are trending, it's really about the same. That's one thing that I think this time of year you're going to start gauging these teams a little bit differently. Look at trending pace. Look at trending metrics. Those are the kind of things you want to look at. And when you look at the Giants defensively, how they're trending, at least against the pass, not much better here. They struggle to get a pass rush, and that's partly why the secondary is good. But you have to figure out a way to get pressure. Let's see if, like, James Betcher decides to, like, dial up blitz right now, because Giants aren't getting home with four. 18% pressure rate on snaps where Betcher rushes four or less guys. So the front four isn't getting any pressure. You would think, got to send some heat, probably leaves you exposed in the back end a little bit. Where the Giants have done pretty well is stopping the run. Top five in that regard in rushing success rate defense. You do get Leonard Williams kind of incorporated into that a little bit as well. So hopefully you can at least stop one component, which is the ground game and Zeke force Dak to be a passer. And hopefully your secondary steps up a little bit. But this is one of those weird times, Todd, where typically, generally speaking, right, the correlation is dog and under. Here, from what I have seen so far, it's dog and over.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, you're watching the market this morning. We saw the total open at 47 in some shops in faraway places. The number has kind of gone all over the place. Saw a wave of support for the New York Giants taking the sevens out of play at some point, either yesterday or Saturday. My timeline eludes me. What have you seen on your end as far as how this game is being bet? We know we're going to see public support for the Dallas Cowboys, but at the same time, have you seen respected bettors coming in on the Giants and the over that you mentioned?
So at 47, which is a key number in the NFL, there was some over money there. We're now at the 48.5. It'll be interesting to see. You know, now the public will come in over on this game likely. And we'll see if someone has a, you know, an itchy trigger finger here and wants to play the peak number under. But I think if the Giants have a chance here, they're going to have to score some points. To your point on the side, yes. 7.5 sharp, even 7 sharp. But we are starting to I think 6 was the lowest number I saw. Actually, I'm wrong. 5.5 at that one shop that we've discussed about catering to sharp guys. So 5.5 was the lowest number I saw on this game. We're now trending back up a little bit towards Dallas. I would say 6.5 is the consensus, soft 7. So I do believe, just again, informational wise, that the Giants are the side here. Let's see if it comes to fruition.
Yeah, you got to go out there and score points one way or another and hope that they can get stops. One of the Giants' bigger home games of the season. Yes. And I'm sure Dallas will have their undivided attention knowing what happened to them last time they set foot in the stadium and the Jets got the best of them. Just ran out of time to try and come back in that particular football game.
I think from a number perspective, Todd, right? That opening week one game in Dallas, same exact number, right? So we've now shifted home field advantage and we're still seeing the same number. So I think from a value perspective, it's why a lot of the professional bettors have gravitated towards the Giants, because this is the same exact number in a different setting, obviously.
And you obviously, it goes without saying, have an upgrade at the quarterback position. Yes. You would think Daniel Jones gives you a little bit more of a puncher's chance to try and put some points on the board than Eli Fish Out of Water Manning did way back in week one before his time as starting quarterback of the Giants was coming to an end. As always, the big game breakdown on Mondays is brought to you courtesy of Fox Bet. The biggest name in sports is now the hottest name in sports betting and one of the fastest growing betting apps out there. Download the app. Real money wagering opportunities in Pennsylvania and New Jersey, especially for all you Giants fans heading out to the game. Fox Bet, make the call. Download the app today. As always, you can follow Payne on Twitter at Payne Insider. I'm Todd Furman. You can follow me there. You can follow the podcast and should, most importantly, at Bet the Board Pod, Dr. David Chow at Pro Football Doc. And Payne, I know we've broken this game down in some great detail and depth. Wasn't sure if there was anything that you wanted to touch on from the weekend that was that we may not have gotten to for tonight's big game in the NFC East.
No, I think that's it. Let's wrap her up. Let's get out of here. We're back on Wednesday with the college football edition, huge LSU-Alabama game, and then Thursday, as always, with the NFL.
Time flies when you're having fun. Past the midway point, or will be after the Cowboys and Giants conclude Week 9. Be talking about Week 10 and the college football playoff rankings unveiled tomorrow. So we'll get a better idea of how the media at least feels about the top four teams in the land. For Payne Insider, I'm Todd Furman. Best of luck with all your wagers on Monday Night Football. And come Wednesday, we'll see you right back here for another edition of the Bet the Board podcast.